Podcast Monsters Podcast. As always, we're here to talk about things horror, sci-fi, fantasy, just about anything nerd-related. I'm your host, George, your jack-of-all-trades. And with me, as usual, is the Falcon. Yeah, I'm not even going to say Lenny anymore. I'm just going to go straight to the goods. Falcon.
That works for me.
Right?
I was furious.
Yeah. And then back from the grave, just tiptoeing on in, it's Chase, our social coordinator. What was that?
A little Shaun of the Dead for you.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Good.
As always, our episodes are brought to you by somebody, and let's check out who we're brought to today.
They're coming to get you, Barbara. And they'll get you, too. At the Hall of the Dead, a George A. Romero tribute. Only at the Famous Monsters Halloween Convention this October 27th through the 29th at the San Jose Convention Center. Experience a Rocky Horror live performance. Meet all your favorite celebrities and stick around for the late night after parties. There's even a free trick-or-treat trail for the kids. Get your tickets today.
Sounds like it's going to be a pretty awesome show, mm-hmm. Doesn't it, guys?
I'm super excited.
Well, we kind of have to go, don't we?
I'd go if I
would. Yeah, I would go even if it wasn't our show and we were literally putting it on.
Agreed. I'm pretty stoked for this. Like, we've done a lot of shows now, mm-hmm. and something we've done together. But this one, like, I feel like my childhood is, like, in show. You know? And a really cool thing, which, you know, anyone who saw or has heard in our commercials, seen that Doug Jones is going to be at our show.
Uh-huh.
I was pretty stoked that we got him. Pretty pumped he's coming.
Yeah.
Even more so is because this episode, we're talking about Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah.
Yeah. Came out this Sunday. We've all watched it recently. Mm-hmm. And I kind of want to pick his ear about what it's like to be on such a huge franchise.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's, you got Star Wars and you got Star Trek, and there's always going to be the war between the Trekkies and the, what is the terminology for Star Wars fans?
I don't know.
The Jedi.
I don't think I've ever heard a unified term.
Yeah. Star Wars. Force wielders? I don't know. In any case, we love it all here. And mm-hmm. let's just dive into it. You know, we watched Discovery. It's been a while since we've had a Star Trek series as opposed to a movie.
Yeah.
You know, so there's, and this is supposed to be based, Star Trek Discovery is 10 years before
the
classic that we all know and love with Captain Kirk and Spock and the guys. So they kind of have this uncharted territory
mm-hmm.
where they can kind of do whatever they want. But at the same time with a show like Enterprise, where it was like 100 years or whatever before the original Star Trek.
Yeah.
You know, there's still some groundwork that was laid down. So
mm-hmm.
I know coming into this, before we even get into what the episode's about, it's like, let's talk about some of the thoughts of what we expected. Like, I was personally a little bit excited because I've always liked Star Trek. It's always been it's one of those like good social commentary shows that delves into the future while still touching upon whatever we're experiencing today. I feel like every Star Trek managed to do that in some way or another.
It pretty much has been doing that since the beginning.
Yeah. You know, so. And then with the Abrams world of Star Trek,
uh-huh.
kind of reinventing it and bringing it into a very, how do I put this? I was almost going to say a Fast and the Furious kind of world. But only because the last director was the Fast and Furious director.
Yeah.
But it is it's a bright Star Trek. It's a very colorful, beautiful Star Trek.
It really
with
is.
A lot more action
than
ever before.
Yeah.
You know,
it's really brought it into big budget, I think is maybe what
most
the word you're looking for.
But I feel like this Star Trek Discovery is trying to combine both of those worlds,
mm-hmm.
you know, trying to appease both fans. Because now there is like this dual fandom where people who are truest, you know, they don't like the Abrams Treks,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then you have the newcomers, like, for instance, Jen is definitely a new Trek fan.
Yeah.
You know, when she saw the Abrams one, she's like, oh my God, this is Star Trek.
That's me. I'm very much that person too. Because I remember watching, The Next Generation with my parents when I was little. And then I've watched some since, but not a lot, but I've seen the Abrams movies.
Yeah.
And so that's where most of my Star Trek perspective first person comes from. Olivia is a huge Star Trek fan. So I let her sort of feed me with info.
I wonder how she's feeling about the the new. Did she get to watch?
She hasn't watched it yet. Oh. I'm gonna bring her over and hopefully we can watch it. We were planning on it, then we got busy. Yeah, we saw The Kingsman instead. Actually, is what happened.
We'll have to talk about that later.
Yeah. But anyway, she hasn't seen it yet.
Yeah. I guess the thing to point out also is that CBS has created this all like CBS All Access, like digital channel now where you have to watch it there. Mm-hmm. So that's something to question if it will hinder its viewership, or not.
I feel that it will.
There is that possibility. Yeah. Anytime that you go into this reclusive thing where not everyone can get to it, or if you have to pay this extra fee.
Yeah. I feel like it was very much like a risk on a strategy that I think could pay off really well, because if there's a series that you're going to bait people into paying for your streaming service for, Star Trek is pretty high up on the list of things that are wise likely choice. Especially making the first two episodes available for everyone to watch.
Yeah.
Like we just did. And then
it's a really good bait.
Yeah.
Really good bait.
And then putting up a paywall two episodes into it with kind of a cliffhanger.
Yeah. And so Chase, what were your thoughts before going into the episodes?
I didn't know what to think about it, because like I wasn't always a Star Trek fan.
Shame. It's okay. We appreciate you. It's okay.
Because I remember when I was younger, that was when the original Star Trek was on, and it seemed really slow paced, and everything was just. So.
Just to backtrack for a second, when you were younger and you said the original Star Trek was on, are you referring that you were around during like the '70s?
No. I'd see it on TV though.
Okay, on the telly.
Yeah, and that was before I saw any of the Next Generation or anything like that. And even Next Generation, when I saw it, again, I was still young. And I was like, okay, so don't have the other people. Now they got an old guy leading them. It's like, and there's a lot more
an
talking.
An old guy. A nondescript old guy.
That's what it was to me when I was
like, Patrick Stewart.
Yeah. Granted, now I'm like, oh, that guy's awesome. But then I was like, oh, it's an old guy now. Like, that's, now there's even more talking. What? This is not... The movies that came out recently got me back on track with it, and I'm like, oh, okay, so now I'm looking back at the older stuff. I'm like, oh, I like it now. This is more enjoyable, even though it's still like different than what the new stuff is. But now I'm grown up. I'm matured. Matured.
Because as your shows mature, you mature with them.
Indeed.
I just like that. There's more talking. it is too bad. Like, the Star Trek series is there is a lot of conversation because it's very political in its subject matter. But I always find it funny when describing it to somebody else and talking. It reminds me of like talking about Lord of the Rings. Initially, it's like, oh, what are the films about? And it's like, well, initially there's this group and they're walking somewhere, and each story is really them just walking somewhere. And that's how it always is with Star Trek. It's like, so what mostly happens in Star Trek? Well, there's usually the Federation, and they deal with some alien race, and they talk about some stuff. There's usually a lot of talking that goes on. And you enjoy this. Why? Because talking
space.
Can be fun.
Yeah,
like a
diplomacy
podcast.
Diplomacy is fun to listen to when it's in space.
Yeah. And that's, I think that was always the cool thing about Star Trek is that...
Mm-hmm.
It took something that it took a lot of real life situations, like you said, diplomacy, where you don't really want to care or hear about it, because it can get boring. It's very true. But like when you put a creepy or freaky little alien face on it, all of a sudden you don't even realize that you're possibly learning something along the way because it's just like, oh, that's really interesting. What I'm looking at, what is that about? And all of a sudden you just indirectly may have learned something historical.
Mm-hmm.
And something about like the politics of your world or the history or something without even knowing it.
Yeah.
I thought that was super cool about Star Trek. And it seems like this new one is going to continue on with that kind of presence, that way of storytelling. Well, at the same time, because now it's just getting to like what happened in the show.
Yeah.
And like, I got to say, this is possibly the most emotional Star Trek TV series that I've ever seen so far within those first two episodes. Like,
yeah,
it did a good job of attacking, like, a lot of, like, cultural things, political things. Like, there was race in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was, even there having, like, there was the two ladies who ran the ship.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, I don't, like, granted, we've had a lady captain before, a commander.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the first time, like, number one, number, like, number two, or number one, or number one, however mm-hmm. you want to consider it. Yeah. You know, like, they ran that shit.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought that was super cool. And it was actually kind of, spoilers, it was kind of bummed out situation with the fact that one of them has to go away.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't like that. Especially since, like, I really like Michelle Yeoh. Like, I've liked her a lot in other films.
She did a really good job.
It was really cool seeing that finally represented. And, like, it hit upon everything. Like, granted, like, a lot of shows nowadays have that whole, like, cultural thing or like, race thing. It's like, we have to have... this black person and mm-hmm. have to make sure there's a lady and make sure we have an Asian and Spanish person and stuff like that all has to be represented. But I don't feel it with Star Trek only because like Star Trek has been doing it for years.
Yeah, they were like, you know? They were the ones who started it with yeah. Uhura back in the original series. Yeah. Like that Uhura, was so
Zulu,
groundbreaking. Yeah.
You know, everyone was there and it was, and, like, it was never, anything was thought of it.
And it totally makes sense because like, why would you be going and interacting with all of these different alien species from a planet that's not even yours and having them be part of your crew
yeah.
when it's a ship that's not diverse on its own, just from Earth. So I think really Star Trek was the, to use a word, pioneer.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
When it came to that. So I think the fact that it's still doing that and has always really been doing that, it's just... It's more almost sort of Star Trek tradition. Like, it's just kind of a given now.
The thing I like about it is that it's not, like, in your face about it.
Mm-hmm.
No,
like
exactly.
A lot of shows that do that, it's like, this is the case, and you have to deal with it, and it's happening, whether or not you like it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like...
This is natural
life. We're
not
even saying it. This is just happening. And this is the show. And you're like, oh, I'm cool with that. Because you're not, like, just trying to shove in my face whether or not I agree or disagree with it. It's mm-hmm. annoying. Either way, even if you agree or if you disagree... Like, if they're just shoving it at you, it's like, I get it. Shut up and give me the plot.
Yeah, it's almost like I think it feels like a lot of shows do it for morality points
mm-hmm.
or, like, brownie points of, like,
exactly,
this is why
yes.
you should like the show. Whereas Star Trek is like, this is just how life is, and this is how we've always done it, so it doesn't even need to get, like, mentioned. Like, yeah.
Yeah, it makes me happy. I mention it because it's one of the things I appreciate about Star
yeah,
Trek.
Yeah, totally.
You know, it's like... I don't feel like I'm being talked down to by my entertainment. You know?
That's what, like, I feel like the way that Star Trek has always, because obviously it's full of stuff like that, like full of like moral lessons and everything, but it never really has, like, it, from what I've seen and what I've kind of come to understand about it is that it doesn't do it in a way that seems like a lecture or seems like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like a Saturday morning cartoon trying to...
Yeah.
Teach you the rights and wrongs through G.I. Joe or something.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Where everyone's like, oh, I get it now. We shouldn't discriminate against people just because of what they look like. And they flat out have a character say it. It just seems inherent to the world of Star Trek.
Yeah.
Which is very much like the regular world,
yeah.
I feel like.
I will say there was that one moment in the first episode where you see the Klingons with each other and everything.
Yeah.
And they're trying to find the next person to, like... As they're calling the light bearer.
The torch
bearer.
Torch bearer, exactly. You know, as kind of as representative.
Light bearer would be maybe a little too on the nose.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the torch bearer.
And the reason you say that is because, like, as you'll see all the Klingons, they're all very dark-skinned. And then there's this one who's albino. And he
mm-hmm.
goes up and, like, I will be tribute, pretty much. And, and you can see that there is a race situation there. And the leader pretty much just straight up tells him, it's like, you know, when I look at you, I don't see a different color. I see a mirror because I see myself in you.
Yeah.
And it felt like it was slightly forced, but at the same time, it's like with everything that's happening, it's like they always, like I said before, they always try to be very relevant to what's happening now.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a really cool scene to have.
Yeah.
You know, especially like it was another race doing it. Especially with the Klingons always being very much stuck in their ways.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
they
what,
stay true to like whatever their faith and belief is.
Yeah.
For them to have that acceptance,
I
was
felt
really
like,
cool.
Yeah, if it had been like humans or Vulcans or like another race, like anyone other than the Klingons, it would have felt maybe a little bit too over the top.
Yeah.
But the fact that it was the Klingons is kind of what stood out to me, because they are so like all about like their tradition and this is how we do things and yeah. honor and all of that.
Which I thought was cool. Like their whole storyline, I felt, for that Klingon ship, because then mm-hmm. you come to find out like that whole ship is actually kind of full of the rejects
yeah.
of the Klingon Empire. Mm-hmm. And this one guy took all of them and unified them. And then in turn, yeah. almost practically unifies the whole like 24 you know, clans yeah. or whatever.
With the exception you of know, the one. Of the that's, one that's
yeah, there's always that
like,
one guy.
Yeah.
yeah. But like, I always, it's like those underdog stories, which mm-hmm. is always nice. It's like, and it's just, it brought this nice thing where I felt like you were kind of rooting for him. Like, even though he yeah. was doing a bad thing by attacking the Federation,
uh-huh. yeah.
there was a, if you look at it, you know, it's always like the good guy in their mind is always the, I mean, the bad guy in their mind is always the good guy. You know,
yeah.
and if you looked at it from his perspective, he was doing something good.
Yeah.
You know, by trying to unify his people. You know, from and people who in essence didn't give a crap about him or who was on his ship.
Yeah.
You know, they show him those flashback scenes where he's getting beat down and everything yeah. and made fun of, and he's trying to restore honor to his house. And it's like, what a wonderful story that is, you know, on its own.
Yeah.
And then it's too bad that he was doing it against the good guys, which is the Federation.
Yeah.
you know? But I thought that was really nice. Like, if you know, you look at it the other side, it's like, what a wonderful story mm-hmm. they just told, you know, for a bad guy who's not that bad.
Yeah, I feel like Star Trek is good at painting things in very much, like, not black and white.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's always another side to a story and stuff like that. Yeah.
It's like, for those who watch the episode, it makes total sense.
Yeah.
It was total black and white colors yeah. in the Klingons.
Yeah.
yeah, it is. It's very true. No. It's nice that it's always been a multi-layered
mm-hmm.
show, and it seems like Discovery is going to hold up to yeah. that. Well, I'll say, like, visually, there's going to be some gripes, of course. You know, some of those CGI moments were a little, like, cringy.
Yeah.
But everything else, like the design of that ship
yeah.
and inside and, like, the makeup and everything on Doug Jones.
Yeah.
Like it was pretty awesome. Like I'd say, like the crew that they have on is, I feel like they saw what the Westmores did, and they're like, we gotta stay true to that, you know, and attempt to elevate it.
Are
and
you
I think they're pulling it off.
Are you talking about on the Federation ship or the Klingons? Like this new Klingon design.
I think I thought everyone's design
yeah.
was nice. The one thing I will say about the Klingons, and the Klingons have always kind of had the short end of the stick here.
Yeah,
is their story is always a little like wishy washy. Because uh-huh. there's a canon story and there's a non-canon, and it's all, like, weird. Does anyone who's watched, like, the original Star Trek, the Klingons look nothing like that at all.
Yeah.
They look like humans, pretty much, just, like, maybe some messed up eyebrows and a widow's peak.
Yeah.
you know? But they had dark skin, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Which, side note, I always thought it was funny that there was never anything said about them going, like, brown face.
Yeah, I wondered that. Like, why are they
It was always okay,
yeah.
but that's just a little side note. But something happens that they all end up getting messed up, and that's how they end up getting like those butt faces that we see in the Next Generation. yes, that's how I always describe it. It looks like someone sat on their face, and then that was the crease indentation mm-hmm. or whatever.
Is that the Federation's fault? Yeah. Federation gave Klingons resting butt face.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
It's messed up.
But there's different stories now, like what happens, like, because then when you go back in time, you'll find that some of the Klingons were already messed up looking.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always this weird thing. It's like, wait, what happened? What's their deal?
Yeah.
Why do some look like this? Why do some look like that? Like, it's a aggravated thing for Trek fans. But in either case, I looked past that and I thought they looked freaking badass.
Yeah.
Like it was really good, and the fact there were so many of them in that makeup, like you know, that must have took forever.
Yeah.
To do
for,
that,
yeah,
you know, and it seems like they're going to be an ongoing threat as they.
Oh, totally.
Are.
I mean, the opening scene was with them,
yeah.
Like, so it seems like that's kind of that's going to be the overarching storyline of the season,
for sure.
In my opinion,
and especially since we saw that they definitely have a connection to the main character,
mm-hmm.
since they killed her family, so
yeah.
that'll be a ongoing. Like, remember, it's like,
yeah.
they're the guys we have to look out for.
Mm-hmm.
I like the effects, like the makeup and stuff for them.
Yeah.
I don't like their clothes.
Their clothes are real intense.
They
they're
seem
really
like,
ornate.
Yeah, and it, which doesn't seem much like them in my opinion. I feel like they'd be more like, let's get ready to battle. There's more like, let's get ready to battle with our pretty frillies.
To be fair, though, the Klingons that we were seeing weren't really directly warriors. They were almost sort of like a council, though, right? Like, they were that's the whole thing with their prophecy and, like, the torchbearer and everything. So, maybe these Klingons aren't, that we were seeing most of, aren't the ones that are, like, doing the fighting. And even the ones that we were seeing in the holograms were, like, the leaders of their respective things. Though they were fighting
a little bit. It seems like, whether it's what they normally wear, if it's warrior stuff or ritual stuff, it just seems really uncomfortable. It's like it pushes up like into their necks and their chins. It just looks like you. It's one of those things. It's like the old school Batman where you have to turn your whole body.
Yeah.
Look one direction. Oh, yeah. It's like they got that going on. It's like they can't move their neck. Check out my pretty neck brace, man. It's pretty solid. I'm intimidating, right? For sure, bro.
Yeah, it's like, you know, when you're that overbearing person who like stands over someone like, what up? What up? You know, you're very stiff. You don't move at all because you're inspirational. Like, I'm a mountain. Maybe that's what it is. It's that form of intimidation.
It's like, I don't have to turn my head to deal with you.
Not to go too outside the story, but it also could be so they didn't have to also put prosthetics on their necks.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Because I could imagine, like you pointed out, they were all in makeup.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that took forever, and it would take so much longer.
Just put them all in turtlenecks.
Just put them in turtlenecks. Put gloves on all of them.
How threatening would that look to you? Just all those Klingons and turtlenecks. Turtlenecks and chains.
I mean, if they had, like, some solid-looking armor from, like, the shoulders down, they had, like, some sort of, like, sleek-looking black turtleneck. Up to their scary faces.
Oh, I went straight up like Christmas sweater, like that's Christmas card turtleneck.
Yeah.
A Klingon Christmas card with a little like. I really want
like
that.
It's like knitted in their sweater. Says like torchbearer.
Yeah.
Someone has to make that now. Art department. Make it now.
Please someone make it happen.
Seriously, make it so. Yeah. No, you know, I have to agree though. Like, yeah, the costuming, and that's I think that's gonna be one of my gripes is the costuming, and it didn't look bad to me. All the costuming had really great detail to it, you know, from the Federation to the Klingons. Because even though it's true, it didn't look like warrior gear whatsoever.
Yeah,
you know, from anything that we've seen in the past from a Klingon, and even if they are like, let's say, a religious type, and these are more of like a council or you know people who preach or whatever. The Klingons have always been represented as a warrior race, regardless. Like, male, female, child, everyone fights. So you'd imagine that even their priests would fight, too.
Yeah.
And be warrior ready. And they didn't really feel like that.
Yeah.
So that was a little off. I can agree with that. And then the Federation, as cool as their outfits look, it's like, you're 10 years before the original Star Trek. Your outfit looks way more advanced than their outfit.
Yeah.
And I get, like, we're in a new day and age. Things should look cooler. You know, we have this new technology. Use it. But there should be some kind of semblance of, like, what it's going to look like 10 years from now.
Yeah.
You know, there is no connection.
I didn't see any color coding or anything.
It was just very minute. It was mostly, like, the metallics on the sides.
The highlights.
Like, some of them were gold and some of them were silver.
Yeah.
And that was about all I noticed. I noticed
that
different kinds of striping
gear
on the shoulder.
Yeah, which probably represented like a chevron and like a sash
and
stuff like
that.
Yeah,
that's what, because I, it wasn't until most of the way through that I even like noticed it. And then I think I was so distracted by everything else, I stopped paying attention to it.
Yeah.
But I only noticed that, that the captain and the admiral had that.
Yeah.
Maybe some other people did too. I stopped paying attention. But yeah, it wasn't, it very much wasn't like red shirts. Like,
yeah, it was so subtle.
Yeah. So it does seem like to do a total about face and to everyone's color coded now within like 10 years.
Yeah.
It's
quite the change.
Yeah.
Like this felt closer to being like Enterprise, and the fact that Enterprises were much like that too. There wasn't a color coded system either. They were all jumpsuited up, you know? And thing about Enterprise that I thought was interesting is that how they were dressed looked like how you would probably dress if you're going into space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, our astronauts go into jumpsuits and then they're up in there, you know.
Yeah.
So that I felt that was relative. And this feels like it's kind of honing in on that look, sort of, but in a, obviously a more militant look, mm-hmm. very sleek. But something that I thought was interesting is that, granted, there's no way anyone's going to see this by watching it on the show. You, mm-hmm. you have to do some research to figure this shit out. But on the side of like the pattern of it mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. actually the Starfleet logo, just used over and over again.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is what they did in Abrams costuming also. You can't tell if you like if you zoom in on it, you can see it's just the repeated emblem over and over again.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So it's like this little tie to the Abrams world indirectly because he mm-hmm. did that. They did that. That wasn't like a
that's pretty
traditional
cool.
Star Trek thing.
Yeah.
So that's something I kind of like. But again, it doesn't look like I don't see the evolution of this into the regular Star Trek. Because at least the thing about regular Star Trek into Next Generation is there was that color-coded system. You know, you still had the red, yellow, blue. Like, all these things were still there.
You could kind of tell what was doing what, yeah.
And it's like, but they still made it their own by making it sleeker, adding the black, you know, all the way through and stuff. And if I'm correct, I think they had jumpsuits also. Right? I think it was like one suit, but eventually
it
became a jacket.
It changed throughout the season.
Yeah, especially if you're a Marina Sirtis character who had like 1,000 outfits.
I was
going to
say,
It's like, today you wear the gear. Tomorrow, just wear a dress. We don't really care. Yeah. It all depends on how hot we want you to look for this episode. Right. That's what it felt like.
I wonder if maybe it's because like we've seen some casualties already.
Yeah.
That seem to be from pretty high ranking people. So maybe things really get overturned for a minute and they just have a whole clean the slate starting over. All right, here's how we're doing uniforms now, here's how we're doing this now, that now. Maybe they just redo everything.
I kind of want to see the episode where that happens, though.
Yeah.
I feel like it'd be a boring episode, but I don't care. Like, I want the episode where, like, we get an explanation of the change of suit, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, why did this happen? What? Like, who decided that, you know?
Star Trek Project Runway?
Yeah.
I'm all for it.
It seems like a stupid episode. I bet somebody listened to it. It's like, what are you talking about? No one cares about the costumes. I care. I want to know. But yeah, that's the dream episode. I want it for every episode, every costume change.
Yes.
I want to have it happen because some council got together again. It's like, all right, guys, it's just not working again. Let's just change it up. Mm-hmm. All right. We got to keep people on their toes. All right. I wonder if it's like, because you mentioned casualties. I have a question. It's like, all right, there has to be a way to know when people are going to die ahead of time. Like, how do we do that?
The red covers up the blood.
Yeah, it's like, there we go.
They tend to die more than anyone else. Let's give them red, so it's harder to tell that.
There we go.
I almost kind of question if that was one of the reasons why they chose not to color code it for this series so that people wouldn't see someone in a red shirt and be like, guess I shouldn't get attached to this character. You know what I mean?
It is true. Which, even though, like, I kind of felt we knew who was going to die ahead of time.
Just, yeah, you mentioned,
I was like, okay.
You mentioned something about
I did mention the main character, But even other characters, like, that person's not talking a lot. They're probably not going to survive this episode. Almost everyone on that bridge was just like, if you didn't talk, you're dead. You didn't talk, you're gone. That's how it kind of felt as it went through, pretty much, with some of those characters. You know, we're a funny part for me. And I probably shouldn't have laughed because the person got messed up. But they're getting attacked. By the Klingons, and then the commander's like, what's the damage report? And right when the guy's about to answer, blasted his face.
Yeah.
And it's probably like, in my head, I was always like, shit's getting real, shit's getting real. But I thought that was just really funny timing. Granted, that's not really funny. Poor guy dies.
Yeah.
But like,
not
from that, no.
Kind of indirectly from that, I guess.
Like, no one, I feel like there should be someone, like, guiding someone who obviously probably had a concussion. Like, he took a blast to the face. Half of his face is so messed up, like, he should be carried away. But she's just like, go to sick bay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, whoa, dude, there's no medical on this ship? Like, these ships house, like, civilizations.
Yeah.
How do you not have someone that can bring him to medical? And, of course, he doesn't get to sick bay. Like, he ends up going to, like, the jail cell where...
The brig.
More spoilers. Yeah. Where our main character is residing. Man, I'm a horrible name. Is Michael?
Mike Burnham.
Yeah. Burnham. Yeah.
I felt really bad for that guy. And I really liked his, not, I'm not saying Michael's a guy, I'm talking about the guy that went to the little cell.
Michael is a girl, everyone.
Yeah, Michael's a girl. Yeah. So, but the guy that went there, that was supposed to go find sick bay, he showed up. He's like, I'm supposed to be in sick bay. There's no doctors. It's like, you could tell he was like messed up.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? He was very disoriented.
And I like that. I like the realism of that, where it's like, oh, this is what really happens in situations. Mm-hmm. That people, not everyone's like, okay, now turn this and do that and fire here. People like panicking and freaking out and like getting disoriented, not knowing what's happening. And so like when he went in there, he just messed up, you know, and you can tell. He's like, we're not soldiers. We're explorers, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like, why are we fighting? And then all of a sudden, he flies out into space with another explosion. Oh, man, that poor guy. He was not in a good place. Yeah.
I like that because you turned to me, too. It's like, wait, is he in space now?
Yeah.
There's an explosion, and I see a body fly. I was like, is
and
that him?
Just like a little yell, like, ah. And then he was gone.
No, yeah, it's really cool, like, in the sense, like, this is bringing it into to a sense of reality where, like, it's true. Not everything is cookie cutter. Not everything is precise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like real world. These you see, they all were young. They were kids, practically, if you think about the situation they're in.
Yeah.
You know, and even the commander said, it's like, you know, these people are not ready for this. You know, war is blood. War, you know, war is a dirty thing.
War
and
is,
I like how they embrace that thought, you know. And there's not this whole thing. It's like, oh, we'll just engage into a fight. It's like, it's whatever, you know. So that was cool. It was very much like that battle scene that you see in, like, Saving Private Ryan, that opening scene on the beach, you know, all these young kids just dying. That's what it very much resembled to me, you know, in a space format, of course, you know, and made for TV. But it's something that the Star Trek television shows have never really embraced in that kind of way. You know, like, they took, like, a movie-esque kind of moment where a full-on battle was just taking out people left and right. Ships being ripped in half, literally ripped in half.
Yeah.
You know, like, that was pretty phenomenal to do on a show, I think.
Yeah.
And maybe it's having that, you know, digital channel is giving them that ability to almost Netflix their show
it,
up.
It could you know? Be. I feel like even the Abrams movies didn't really do that so much. Because in the third one, the ship gets kind of ripped in half. But it wasn't in the same way of like it's in half and now these people are being torn out into space. This is where all like it was even more like, I guess not really subtle about the damage, but it was more in a way of like, how are we going to get off of this planet that we kind of crash landed on? And not so much look at all these people whose lives are like being torn apart.
Like literally. The commander who came to help them out,
the admiral,
like seeing their ship getting torn in half by the Klingon ship, and then they're like, oh, like, what's happening? It's like, oh, they're about to self-destruct, you know. So you know, like, no one on that ship escaped. They all accepted, it's like, we're gonna go now. This is it. This is our only way to attack. And
we're either all gonna die just from being hit, or we're gonna die at least doing damage to them.
So like that was like, there's a lot of like deep moments like that were very impactful. And I thought, like, that's to me, that was like an impressive thing to take on for a TV show. Back onto a gripe though. So that scene where you talked about the prison scene, where like the brig gets blown up, he goes into space and everything. Technology. They were advanced enough that ship had this force field that would just patch up holes in the ship. If I recall correctly, original Star Trek, Next Gen Star Trek, Voyager Star Trek, I don't think any of them had that, where there was just this electronic barrier that would just, bam, patch up a hole, you know, to that extent. Like, it looked cool, what it did was awesome, but I've never seen it done in a Star Trek before.
Yeah.
And the fact that this, again, it's like 10 years before, it's like,
yeah,
when you're going to say stuff like that, some of your technology can't be that cool, you know?
Especially because she even pointed out at one point, like, this ship isn't the newest Federation ship.
Exactly.
Like, I keep blanking on the name of the ship. What's the name of the ship?
I can't remember. I'm trying to remember. I keep on thinking, I was like, wait, Europa? That's, or Europa?
Europa was the one that got turned in half. One. Yeah. I'll look it up. Anyway, the ship, like, to even point out that there was obsolete technology for the moment that they were in.
Yeah.
And that was even 7 years prior to what we were seeing right then.
Exactly.
Because that was when Michael first got there. Side note, yeah. I have to point out how much I love that her name is Michael. And it's right? spelled yeah. just straight up like Michael. Yeah. Like, it just looks like
regular Michael. I was waiting for
Michael.
Like, wait, is this a longer name for something else?
No,
and
her
it's
name
like,
is
no,
Michael.
Her name is Michael.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right. That's it.
I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah. I feel like it adds to everything we were saying earlier. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is just the way it is. And even like, yeah. what's really cool is her upbringing too. The fact that she is raised by Vulcans.
Yeah.
And everything. And they had her go through their teachings and their school and stuff. Because they're another race that's very much like Klingons. That they're, while they work with the humans,
yeah.
the idea that they would adopt a human, like that's yeah. going against their usual beliefs
I mean,
and culture.
They were already iffy on Spock.
Yeah, exactly.
And he was half Vulcan.
Yeah, he was an anomaly.
She's not Vulcan. She's just human.
Yeah, so I thought that was very interesting. And it's also kind of cool seeing, it's, I know going into this, we probably thought that Doug Jones's character, what was his name?
Lieutenant Saru.
Saru was going to be like that Spock character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like watching it, like, oh, wait, she's kind of their Spock character.
Mm-hmm. A little bit, yeah.
You know? Because when you think about how Spock was initially, like, since he was half human, he definitely had his moments where he mm-hmm. would do human things. You know, he had emotions. And it would, you know, he would be snarky a lot of times with the captain and everything. And there was definitely a buttload of snark.
Uh-huh.
In both these episodes.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
To the point where they even call themselves on it. It's like, is yeah. there need to be the sarcastic? It's like,
no.
No, but
it's more
yeah.
fun that way.
No, but I like it.
Yeah. And I thought that was kind of, that was nice too. It's like it add that little sense of comedy without being outrageous,
mm-hmm.
you know, or I don't, yeah. I don't know. Like, it felt
It
natural.
Felt very real.
Yeah.
Like, this is clearly a crew that has spent a lot of time around itself.
Yeah.
One of the things that I really liked about Doug Jones's character is he's like their chief science officer. So that's
yeah.
like he's meant to be the most sort of like exploratory and like, but he's afraid of everything.
Yeah.
Like they
yeah.
pointed out, like he's afraid, like he's, and he explained it really well. And it was nice to have like such like a clear single moment of explanation where it's like he's like, in my, where I come from, the two races we have are predator and prey, and so I'm literally like raised and brought up to just sense danger and death coming. That's my purpose in life. And he's the chief science officer.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That was such, like, I feel like that's going to make for some really interesting dynamics.
Yeah, for sure. It kind of felt like he's kind of like their Data.
Yeah.
Really, to the show. But with a sense of emotion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, while Data was discovering emotion and learning about it, he mm-hmm. has it. He knows. Mm-hmm. You know? Through his people, like he's explaining, like, there's a good chance he's seen some shit along the way. You know? So everything that they're going to encounter, whatever he fears, there's a very good reason. And fear trumps science. So it's true. Like, yeah, his character's going to be very interesting,
mm-hmm.
I think, to see. In which I'm excited to see what he brings later on to these shows, because he had a very cool, like, not just characteristics, but his mannerisms. Like, the way
yeah.
he moved, I felt there was a certain flow to it.
That he had a really interesting body language.
Yeah.
Where it's like you can almost see him recoiling half the time, but while he's practically standing straight
yeah.
up, like he has this weird sort of arch backwards that he does with just his torso and his arms.
Yeah, I think it shows it. It speaks volumes to what he brings to a character in general. You know, anyone familiar with Doug Bradley's work? Like this, he's the man behind
Doug
the face.
Doug Jones.
Oh, what did I say? I said
Bradley.
Doug Bradley.
Yeah.
We have too many Dugs. So many Dugs at our show.
Yeah, Dugs
coming
to
the show.
Yeah.
yeah.
But, yeah, Doug Jones, you know, like, this guy is, anytime you see someone in makeup, pretty much in a badass movie, he's probably going to be the guy,
yeah.
you know, and every time he's different characters, like Pan's Labyrinth, he played like two to three different characters, you know, and each one was unique in its own way, but, like, his body movement made it come to life, and even, like, in this, like, the subtle nuances that he does just add so much to the character, which, when you think about it, we didn't see that much of him in the first two episodes, mm-hmm. But it was enough to leave an impact of, like, where you notice those little things, yeah. You know. So I think it's going to be pretty interesting, especially since where the show left off, mm-hmm. where we're seeing, like, she's now being court-martialed, it seems. You know,
yeah.
For what she did, because she does...
She got in trouble.
She causes a mutiny. It happened. Yeah. You know,
well, she doesn't cause it because she just is it. She is the mutiny.
She's a one person mutiny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for a good reason. She tried to save people. Yeah. It makes you wonder, like, if they had listened to her, what would have happened?
Uh huh.
Yeah.
You know, maybe things would have worked out fine. Because they made that very clear multiple times that her success rate was at 100%. She never failed.
Yeah.
You know, so to go against her at this time, it makes you wonder, like, man, maybe if you guys listened.
Yeah.
You know.
But she did make a really solid point of, like, what we're doing right now is 100% different from everything else that we have ever done.
Yeah.
Like, this is war. I've seen it. I know what it does. Like, I know what it is and how it affects people.
Still that curiosity. But still, mm-hmm. it ends up, like, we see in the future episodes that she's going to be what looks to be, I guess, I'm kind of confused, I'll be honest, of what the Discovery ship is. Because they make it seem like she's going onto a prison ship. But this prison ship is living up to his name of discovering things?
Well,
I don't think she's on a prison ship. Like, she was a prisoner, and this captain or whoever's taking different people with different experience and mindsets or whatever, and having them come to the ship to, looks like, do experiments and work on things that are not quite... that they're not open about, really. They're kind of keeping it a little hush-hush type.
Yeah, that's kind of what...
Like, maybe it's that hacker program. It's like, all right, you're a hacker. We're not going to put you in jail. We're going to have you work for the government.
Yeah.
And you'll serve your time there.
Something very much like that.
Hmm,
like, work that off your debt to society by joining us on this ship and, like, being a part of it.
Yeah, it seems interesting. I'm curious towards that. Because it also seems like some of the old members from these first two episodes follow her there. Not necessarily follow her directly, but they just happen to be on that ship.
Yeah.
Doug Jones' character.
Yeah.
which made me think, like, huh, that's interesting. He must just be, like, really actually good at what he does then. Even though he's kind of like, I'm afraid of that. But,
well,
I mean,
he was on the ship longer than she was.
Yeah.
Even because they showed when she first got to the ship, and he was already there. So who knows how long he'd been with Captain, I think her last name was Giorgio.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think right about now is a good time to take a break and hear from our sponsors. When we come back, we'll give our opinions on The Kingsman, The Golden Circle.
Today's show is brought to you by Famous Monsters Halloween Convention this October 27th through the 29th at the San Jose Convention Center. Meet guests like the cast of American Gods or Malcolm McDowell. Even Doug Jones from Star Trek Discovery will be there. Experience haunt attractions, a live Rocky Horror performance, and even a trick-or-treat trail for the kids. For more information, go to FamousMonstersHalloween.com.
Eleni, what did you think of The Kingsman, The Golden Circle?
So you guys know from listening last week, I didn't actually see the first one.
Yeah.
But I did read the comic. And The Golden Circle was, I was more entertained by it than I thought I was going to be. Because I was worried it was going to take itself too seriously and how much it didn't take itself seriously.
At all.
Yeah, but like, I feel like we've seen movies where it's like, there's so much winking at the audience that it becomes like, so contrived in itself. Yeah. And I was worried that was going to happen. And it didn't. A lot of the movie took me by surprise in a bunch of different ways. Not just because there were twists in it that were actually pretty good.
Oh, the twists.
The twists. I had a really good time watching it.
What was your favorite scene from the movie?
The first scene. Actually,
the opening scene
with the car chase was my favorite scene.
It was pretty badass.
It was a really good car chase.
Yeah.
It was a really good car chase. I kept like there were so many things that like this would happen and then this would happen and then a minigun comes out of the top of this tiny yes. British car and
mini coming out of a mini.
Practically,
it was.
It may as well been that.
It was mini almost that. Yeah.
How much better would that have been?
That would have been hilarious. A mini out of a mini. That's hilarious.
Yeah. Missed jokes. Missed opportunities, guys.
Here all day.
But yeah, that I think that the first scene was my favorite.
It's true. The opening scene was really good.
It was a very
good.
Strong opening scene.
Like it's car chases for opening scenes are no new thing. Mm-hmm. For any movie, especially for a spy film. Like, how many 007 movies have we seen where that always happens? You know? But, like, they found a way to kick it up a notch where others didn't. Like, being here at Famous Monsters, there's always that gripe, you know, about, like, oh, CGI, how much I despise CGI. I want practical effects.
Yeah.
But here's where CGI comes into play, where it's... To have done that practically, someone would have died.
Yeah.
You know, like you couldn't have done it that way.
Yeah.
And that was the perfect place to utilize it. And they did it in a very smart way with all of the transitions and everything.
Yeah.
So I think that was a very wise place to do it. And it made everything look phenomenal. Like,
yeah. The fight choreography of that car chase was really good.
Yeah.
I mean, the fight choreography in the whole movie was, I think, pretty good.
Yeah. And that's something that they had in the first one, which I really enjoyed. Yeah. It was really good fighting.
I want to hear about the fighting. Are they like reaching out and like roll down your window, bro? Roll down your window, bro.
No, it's two people, Eggsy and
an ex-recruit
from the first.
Did you watch the first?
No, but apparently a loser made it from the first to the second.
Yeah, he was a loser. Yeah,
yeah.
Remember, he lost his arm along the way.
Stab him in the face.
So now he's got this. A robot arm.
Yeah.
So that's part of it. So there's a robot arm.
Yeah.
They're fighting in a car while other cars are chasing them. So it's a fight scene and a car chase happening kind of simultaneously. That's basically what the first scene was.
Yeah. And while that's happening, the bad guy is also like trying to hack into the computer that is in that car. Yeah. There's hacking going on. There's a fight. There's a car chase. They're getting shot at.
There's minis coming intense. Out of...
There's a robot arm.
There's minis.
Yeah. Yeah, which I gotta say for me, that robot arm thing was pretty cool. For the fact that anyone who's played a little video game called Bionic Commando by Capcom...
Yes!
You remember that game?
Yes!
So, like, obviously there was the classic, like, Nintendo version, which was all 8-bit and kind of crappy, but still super fun.
Yeah, that's one I played.
Yeah, and then there was a new one that they came out with, like I think a PS2, I want to say, and maybe 360, where they kicked it, like they changed it up, they gave him a whole revamp, like I think they gave him like dreadlocks or whatever. But the whole look for his bionic arm was very similar to what they designed in this movie. And Bionic Commando, for a while, was considered, always pitched to be a film, but there was always like something that held it back, because it's a video game. People don't want to see video games. But yeah, they do. It's a weird conundrum. But yeah, when I saw that, I was like, there you go. You can easily make Bionic Commando, because that arm that this guy's using does all the same things that the video game does. It has the grappling arm and everything. Like, dude, if you love that video game, you're going to want to see every scene that this guy has.
Yeah. I'm going to go out and buy an NES and get that game.
Oh, dude. It was so cool. But now that they've done this, like, I feel like that movie can't be done. Mm-hmm. Just for the fact that they'll be like, oh, you guys are copying. Yeah. Kingsman Golden Circle, because they did that first.
Yeah, but then you can throw that right back at them and be like, yeah, well, don't mind my nose turning up right here, but turns out you're super wrong, buddy. And then it's like, oh my goodness, it's a snoot off.
Yeah. Snooty, snoot, snoot.
Who can be the most smug? Go!
Yeah, I thought that was super cool. I really enjoyed that. I gotta say, for me, one of my unexpectedly favorite scenes. So I thought it was going to be the fight scene stuff, personally, because I opened up so strong with the car chase. I was like, this is so good. What's gonna top this? Yeah. What in this movie can honestly entertain me more than what I just saw right now? Because even the fight scenes that followed that, like when we finally meet the statesmen, and
that
seeing
was,
like,
I
how
almost
badass
named,
they are.
Named the fight with Channing, like their little spat with Channing Tatum as my favorite.
Yeah, because that was cool. Channing Tatum kicked their asses. Yeah. He totally annihilated Eggsy and Merlin. without even trying.
Yeah.
Which made me a little more upset when later on, like, they took him out. Like, he doesn't die, but he just gets sick from, like, the terrorist attack that happened.
He was only in it for, like, 5 minutes.
Yeah. And they put him on ice. That. I was like, what a waste. And, like, I said it before, like, I wasn't a big Channing Tatum fan, but now I've kind of grown, and, like, I like him now, and I want to see more of him. And it's like, why did you waste such a good Trump card? You know? That was a good selling point.
Are they going to have a third one and bring him back?
I think so.
Because I want them to have an all statesman movie.
Yeah.
Olivia and I were talking about that, and I really just want a cowboy spy movie of just, like, because there's so much potential there. Like, we were talking about how funny it would be if they had spurs that they could take off and use as, like, ninja stars.
Oh, my God. Yeah, they should have done that.
Well, no, we have a lot of ideas for how cool cowboys, like, high-tech cowboy spies would be without the rest of the movie. Like, I don't want to say getting in the way, but they were my favorite part.
Yeah.
And I want to see a movie of just the statesmen.
No, they were good. It was nice because they weren't all just full cowboy stuff either.
Right.
It was, like, just Americanized things.
Oh, totally.
So the fact that they're secret weapons as opposed to being, like, in a pocket pen, you know, whatever. It's like, no, it's in a baseball and a baseball bat.
Yeah.
Because we're in America.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah.
They got their electrified lasso, a whip. He's got a retractable whip. Yeah. That's super cool.
It's pretty badass. I want that stuff.
I know. I want to see all that stuff.
But the thing that made me the most entertained was the cameo and usage of Elton John.
Yeah.
I did not see it coming. Like, the fact that, okay, he got kidnapped. Like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
But then how they utilized him later on
was
phenomenal.
They did a good job.
Because there's a moment when the Kingsmen are now on the island where Julianne Moore, she's the drug kingpin of the world.
Of every drug.
Yeah, like, she has monopolized drugs altogether. There is no other drug dealer in the world but her.
It's just her.
Yeah. Don't know how that happened. It just did. We have to accept it. It just is. So, but she's crazy. She kidnapped Elton John, and she has him performing for her all willy-nilly. So during they're there to stop her from doing what she's doing, like killing people in the world and stuff like that. They don't know Elton John's there. So Elton, who's, like, with some henchmen, is, like, he gets to realize, like, oh, wait, there's an attack. Like, I'm being rescued. This is a rescue mission.
Yeah.
So this is his moment where he realizes, like, all right, it's on. And he fights the henchmen. And it gets all, like, martial arts acrobatic, like, where, and he does, like, a jump kick in the air.
He's in one of his most
bizarre,
like, over the top outfits, like,
for, like, back, you
know,
in the day.
You know the ones that have, like, the giant feathers all
the
over
ones
it?
Look like the Klingons.
No, it's more than that. It's literally like rainbow ostrich feathers everywhere. Like, it's giant. He's got a hat that's got, like, it's like a cap that's got it's very, like, let me see if I can find
it. It's full on Vegas.
It's very Vegas. Very Vegas.
Yeah. But it's wonderful because, you know, he's not doing any of the stuff for real. You know what I mean? Like, he's still got, like, the Elton gut and everything. But he's just jumping in the air, kicking the guy in the face, doing flips and stuff. And he takes him out.
Yeah.
He beats their asses. Which in turn actually made me wonder, it's like, how did you get captured? It's like, apparently you're bad. Like, I was waiting to find out that he was a Kingsman himself, honestly, with everything he was doing. But he wasn't. But, like, just that, it was so random how it just came out of nowhere. And it made me so happy. There was so much joy I got out of that.
It was basically like these ones.
Oh, boy. Did you find it?
I found, like, him in the original one that it was based on.
Okay, yeah.
See, apparently, from what I'm seeing there, it's all because he's got, like, the distractions going on. It's like, you're looking over here, I'm kicking you from there. You don't know what's happening.
He did a jump kick.
And
and it flew, too. Like, it wasn't like he just, like, stood up straight up in the air and jumped.
Yeah,
kicked.
No,
like,
he launched it.
Yeah, he launched, exactly.
And his form was good. Yeah. Like, as soon as that happened, Olivia leaned over and was like, how was his form? And I was like, it was actually really good.
Yeah, so whoever orchestrated that did a good job.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a wonderful, like, him and Colin Firth's character, they end up teaming up against this robot dog, and they fight the robot dog because
she's Elton, got two robot dogs, Jet and Benny, and they're very cute.
Yeah. And that Elton is safe. They don't kill Elton. They'll kill everyone else.
He's identified because he's a friend. Like a friend.
Yeah. So he's like, don't worry, I got this. So he stands, like, in front of him and everything so that Colin Firth safe. And so Colin is standing behind him with, like, a bowling ball, and he's just smashing the dog from, like, left to right.
Yeah.
awesome. And, but then now Julianne Moore is seeing this, and so she's like, "Well, I can't have that." So she tells the dog to kill Elton John.
Oh yeah. No!
But it's okay. Elton totally survives. He's and fine. They double team. They each grab a bowling ball and they smash the dog.
Yeah.
And
no, he pops up like 5 times.
Yeah.
In the movie.
That's
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah. No, he's a pretty consistent character throughout.
Yeah.
He's in it actually probably almost as much as Halle Berry is in it.
And Channing Tatum.
More than Channing Tatum. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. I just like how the last thing that you see, or one of the last things that you see from him, is because calling out to thank you. It's like, do you think it'd be possible, if we save the world, do you think I can go to one of your shows?
Can I get tickets to your concert?
And he's like, darling, if you save the world, you can get a backstage pass.
And then he blows a kiss on
her. Yeah. It's like, oh, you know that. Chase, man, you gotta go watch The Kingsman.
You'll have a good time. It's a really good time.
Yeah. And there was a bit of a twist, which I was surprised. And I think what helped that is the fact that, like I said before, like, this is an original story now.
Yeah.
So everything that happened was going to be a surprise. Like, there was nothing that we would have really predicted unless it was just bad storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say there was that didn't exist in the movie, because it did have its moments.
I have a couple.
What? Okay, we said what we liked. What was the one? What's the one thing? Let's mention one thing that really.
Okay. I have, okay, here's
it's just
the thing.
Funny. Before we're like, this is a good movie, you should watch it.
Yeah.
Just
here's the thing is that I have a lot of like small gripes of like continuity issues that like little things that you would look on IMDb to be like, this was this in one scene and not this in another. Okay. I guess, I don't want to say the gripe that I had surrounding the twist, because I feel like if I explain why I have a gripe with it, it's going to give stuff away. And I don't want to say that.
The viewers don't care. See, look, they just told me right now. They said they don't mind.
I heard it, and I'm going to plug my ears so you can go ahead.
Yeah. It's total spoilers. I'll write it in our description.
Okay.
So they know ahead of time.
Well, I didn't want to spoil it for Chase, but...
Oh, are you going to watch this, Chase?
He can't hear you.
He can't hear me. Okay, boom.
So, the twist of Whiskey actually being a bad guy, I felt like it was a good twist in that I really didn't see it coming. But their execution of every part of it, I felt like was so weak. Like it felt like it was put in just to be a twist.
Yeah.
And just to be there. Because the backstory they gave about it was just dumb, honestly. And they had no lead up to it. Like they had Colin Firth's character suspect him.
Yeah.
And then never explain why. He was like, oh, I guess it's just my instincts. And I was like, you really didn't want to write this twist, did you? You just wanted it to be in there, but you didn't want to put in any work surrounding it. I thought it was
reasonable having Colin Firth suspect him.
Yeah.
That I thought was okay. It's like, yeah, of course, he's such a top dog agent that he would figure something out, like, just from a sixth sense. But it's true, like, with what ended up happening, it's like, really? That's it.
If they wanted to leave it to a sixth sense, I feel like he would have like pulled Iggy aside and be like, I don't really trust this guy, et cetera, et cetera. They could have left it at just that, but instead he took direct action and everyone was like, what the hell is happening? And then he was like, oh, he was right all along. I guess he's just that good. And I'm like, are you serious though? Like,
especially after that bar fight.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, he's a little rusty still.
Yeah. Anyway, that's my main gripe.
I think you're good.
And I'm back.
See, I think for me, and this isn't going to ruin anything.
The way he just looked at me, this isn't going to, oh my God, it's going to ruin everything.
Well, obviously, you know people die in the movie.
Yeah.
So this is about someone who dies in the movie.
That's okay.
Oh, is it what you... Actually, I realized we were talking about all of this stuff at lunch yesterday, so...
It's true. You actually already know everything.
Man.
So I don't know why you're covering your ears.
I didn't know what I wasn't... I don't know what I don't know.
You got me the t-shirt out of that for you now.
I don't know what I don't know.
So yeah, it's about Merlin's character and the whole like trip mine thing.
Yeah.
Like that thing just annoyed me. And with the crap out of me. Like, there was little things, like, it's true. There were many little gripes. That was come on, like, you're better than this. Yeah. Why did you let that happen?
Like, we talked about the inconsistency surrounding the meat grinder.
Yeah.
and how it would filter things out and not filter things out. Another thing that I thought was just really weird, and this isn't maybe a necessarily a gripe or inconsistency, because it could just be Poppy being the way that she is and kind of out of her mind.
Yeah.
But you really have to have a 2-gallon vat of molten gold just being like there melted all the time. Like, that seems a little bit inconvenient. Like, it seems like an exclusive enough thing where it would kind of go on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah.
And she has the power to just make people wait. Instead, it's like, go over there and get the tattoo that is already molten, and here's a 2-gallon little vat of molten gold that we're just going to use a tiny little bit of just to tattoo a circle. It's like, so yeah, that could be Poppy being Poppy.
Yeah.
Or
she was crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you've got a monopoly on all drugs,
do what you want.
You can have a thing of gold bullying next to you at all times.
Yeah, it's like having laser sharks.
Yeah.
It just seems
lasers on their head.
Yeah.
Freaking sharks.
You know what my thing was with that gold vat? Mm-hmm. And not so much the gold vat itself, but the fact that it couldn't tattoo a perfect circle.
Yeah.
It's like, man, I know human beings who can tattoo a perfect circle better than that thing.
Yeah.
It was always busted.
And that girl was a robot.
Yeah. That was my thing with
she
that.
She was
it's
a
like,
cool robot, but yeah.
I'm pretty pissed off. I got an imperfect circle of gold on my chest.
Yeah.
I used to listen to A Perfect Circle.
Me too.
I haven't thought about that band in so long.
Super side note there. But yeah, the fact that Merlin had to die. Like, I wouldn't have minded that he died if they killed him off in a better way.
Yeah.
You know, it was just like, how are you going to kill off the smartest guy on your team in such a stupid way?
It literally was like, okay, let's take the training wheels off of your bike. And then immediately the kid rides out in front of like a train.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, I guess that was...
Oh, bad parenting.
Yeah. But I'd say it was... All in all, everything was super entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Everything I wanted to get out of it, I did.
Yeah.
You know?
Especially no, I wanted more Statesman and Channing Tatum. So I can't totally agree with it.
Sequel, man. Sequel.
I hope so.
Yeah. I hope that your and Olivia's dreams come true and we get a Statesman movie. Like, I don't even want... I don't want a Kingsman 3.
Yeah.
I want a Statesman
well,
part 1.
Well, because I told you the reason why we don't want to watch the first one is because British people... kind of get
those
on their
damn
nerves.
Brits.
No offense to British people, but it's...
we love you.
Yeah. I love your baking show.
What is pudding?
Yeah, can you please tell us what pudding is? Any British people that are watching?
Special service announcer from Famous Monsters to all Brits.
Yeah, we're very confused about what designates a pudding from a not a pudding. Is it baked? Is it steamed? Does it need to have bread? Does it need to have a custard
element?
Gelatinous? We can't figure it out, and we're trying really hard.
I feel like someone, like, we'll get that one lucky person that's, like, in Liverpool or something listening to us. Like,
yeah. Our pudding is
stupid
different.
Questions.
Kingsman 3, Secret of the Pudding.
Oh, my God.
That could be a great scene, even though this is always like a joke, but like since at the end of The Kingsman 2, Channing Tatum ends up with the Kingsman.
Yeah, that's right.
And he becomes one of them.
He looked weird in a bowler hat.
He looked really weird, yeah.
I was like, he's not supposed to be wearing that hat.
They should have like a conversation where like he's like, man, I can really go for some pudding right now. And they bring him like some bread pudding.
And
he's just like, this ain't
pudding. I wanted to, yeah. I'm actually kind of surprised that they didn't do that.
Talk about pudding?
No, not pudding specifically, but the whole in Britain, they call it this, and in America,
they
call it this. Like, biscuits.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Because they very clearly wanted to play on the whole, like, Brits versus Americans thing. That was another group. I don't like that trope.
Statesman, the movie, come on. This
Please.
Is your chance to do all these things that we're talking about.
I even gave you an idea about the Spurs.
Look on your face. Please use it.
Please use it. No, I just want a Statesman movie.
It's gotta happen.
Mm-hmm.
I can do a country accent. I can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you guys can't afford Channing Tatum, we got Chase Hensley here.
Yeah. Who dances more than Channing?
Yes. Yeah.
Until proven otherwise.
It's already like a country type of dance.
Yeah. Well, we've dubbed the hillbilly, so it can't get more country than that.
Dang, come on now.
He even comes with spoons.
I don't know quite how to use them, but I'll do it.
Thank you for putting. Tell you that right now. Well, I think that wraps up another episode of the Famous Monsters Podcast. Yeah.
Like a lasso.
Indeed.
We're going to go have some American pudding.
Yeah. Chocolate and vanilla. Maybe some butterscotch.
I won't tap you.
Banana pudding.
Georgia. George is freaked out. Are you okay? He's like, his face is crazy.
I may have had a situation with tapioca pudding that I don't speak of.
I can see that now.
So, yeah, if you want to follow us, where can that be, Chase?
ChanningTatum.com. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Famous Monsters, or find us on Facebook, search Famous Monsters Filmland, or at FMOFL, and check out our YouTube channel, Famous Monsters of Filmland,
where you can catch past episodes of this podcast, or even Famous Monsters TV. Mm-hmm. Or if you like to have it on time, you can go on Saturdays at 10 p.m. on Coffee 20 and watch it then. That's what I'd advise.
We'll
the more
there.
You watch, the possibilities are endless. All right. We're signing off.
Bye.
Night, night.